Thank you, Dave. When Bill Campbell phoned to invite me to serve on this panel, I said, Bill, you've got the wrong fella. Politics is not my métier. You're going to have to find somebody else. And he said, well, John, you don't understand why I'm calling you. I'm trying to find somebody who is so old and so seasoned that his mere presence on the panel will give it heft, so it will seem an appropriate conclusion for this Midwestern meeting. Now, I'm not making this up. This is what he said. But I ask you, how could a fellow turn down an invitation like that? I should, however, say that I do have one semi-political chapter in my life. I was one of the founding directors of the American Conservative Union. I'm going to address the topic by entering through the side door. You'll recall that two young men, Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris, planned and then carried out the slaughter of fellow students at Columbine High School in Colorado. It was an utterly horrifying crime. The American people were stunned. Clearly, action had to be taken to put a stop to the recurrent school ground shootings. The resulting provision of metal detectors, video monitors, increased counseling and security personnel, vigorous campaigns for gun control, are among the many preventive efforts that were undertaken. Unfortunately, they are all directed at symptoms, only symptoms. The fundamental fact is, to put it bluntly, that Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold are savages, incapable of recognizing and refraining from an act of absolute evil. They are moral ciphers, devoid of any controlling sense of right and wrong. Also, they are the hapless victims of their country's default in its most fundamental obligation to its children. Every nation, large or small, tribal or industrialized, must train each new generation how to live responsibly in their own society. Train them how to live responsibly in their own society. Human beings are not born with inclinations to live as cooperative members of the group. The young must be taught what is right and what is wrong. And if they are successfully taught these things, they turn out to be people of good character. The president of Kenyon College back in the 1950s, Gordon Keith Chalmers, wrote what is arguably the most important work of educational philosophy to appear in America in the 20th century. It was published by Henry Regnery. He said it was one of the two or three most important books he published in that long career. Its title was The Republic and the Person. And the title is significant. The first obligation of schooling, of education, is to prepare the student to be a responsible member of the society, to be a participating member of the Republic. The second obligation of education is to prepare the student to be a competent individual. The Republic and the Person concluded with this statement by Gordon Chalmers: the aim of education is moral maturity. Now, the United States educational system performed this task of acculturation effectively for about 150 years. When I was a child, I would walk my little brother at night a mile and a half away across the railroad track and across a park to the community house at night. My parents didn't have the slightest fear that anything could happen to me. When I was a child, I rode my tricycle down the sidewalk out into the street. Mrs. Prindeville was coming along in her car. She couldn't stop. She bumped into me. My parents didn't sue Mrs. Prindeville. It was unthinkable. You don't sue the neighbors to get rich. Nobody in our town would have sued Mrs. Prindeville. We were trained what is right and what is wrong. The whole society was in those years. Now, the United States did this effectively for 150 years, but it withdrew from that critically necessary function about the middle of the 20th century. The result of that tragic lapse is that we have at least two generations of cultural orphans who were never successfully introduced to their political and moral heritage. They have not come to understand the importance of and embrace the ideals and the standards of behavior that make it possible for people to live together amicably and productively in a free society. Now, except in those situations where families or churches or communities have managed to perpetuate the proper acculturation of the young, the United States people have increasingly become obtuse about behavioral standards. They are, to be blunt again, moral pygmies. They are the voters who 4 years ago re-elected a president manifestly devoid of morals and integrity. Such a person could not have been re-elected 50 years ago, or probably 30 years ago. In 1940, Christopher Dawson wrote from England, "The idolatry of power has resulted in a new paganism that is destructive of all moral and intellectual values." The idolatry of power, I think, is what we see in the present administration. 51 million of America's morally stunted people were glued to their TV sets to see the final episode of the Survivor series. 50 years ago, I doubt if such tawdry junk could have been sold as a dime novel. In the computer business, they talked about GIGO, garbage in, garbage out. Minds that are fed on junk food, like the Disaster series, develop a comic book mentality. And they go into a deep decline when a British princess dies. Last November, at the World Congress of Families in Geneva, Switzerland, a landmark address was given by Dr. Margaret Ogola. She is a Kenya physician who heads a hospice for HIV-positive orphans. She spoke of the causes of the catastrophic AIDS epidemic in Black Africa. For several weeks, there was a spate of front page articles in the Newsweek and Time and US News and so on. 70% of the AIDS patients are in Black Africa. She spoke of the causes of the catastrophic AIDS epidemic in Black Africa. She said that for generations, religious taboos had effectively minimized sexual activity outside of marriage. Sexual diseases were not much of a problem. Those tribal norms of sexual morality were shattered, she said, by influences from the Western nations. She mentioned three of those influences: the mass marketing of contraceptives, the promulgation of value-neutral and non-judgmental education, and what she called Planet Hollywood, which disseminates throughout the world the message that pleasure is the ultimate good. What she was saying loud and clear, friends, was that the amoral campaign of Planned Parenthood and the products of the entertainment industry created by morally stunted impresarios and the educational philosophy advocated by our morally deficient academics are largely responsible for the spread of the AIDS epidemic in Black Africa. What a terrible indictment. Do you suppose if this information were widely known in America, our people would sense any responsibility for their part in spreading the AIDS plague or have any pangs of conscience? Well, as we have seen, the values of Planet Hollywood and the Clinton administration have been virtually interchangeable. Nobody should be surprised that in this week's election, the Gore column has California and their eastern states where the amorality of Planet Hollywood is most warmly welcomed and is most powerfully reinforced by the prominent newspapers. Nor should we be surprised to find in the Bush column a very large part of the heartland of America between the east and west coasts, where, as was mentioned in an earlier panel, churches and families and communities are still, to some significant extent, carrying on the traditional acculturation of the youth. Character certainly counted in the 2000 election, but in my judgment, it is the very large and still expanding quotient of amorality in the American populace that deserves our utmost concern.